Good morning. Let us now gather ourselves and turn our hearts in prayer. Blessed are you, O Lord our God, ruler of the universe. We give thanks for the ways you raise up leaders in our communities, for the ways you provide through government. May you be a guide to the senators as they deliberate this day. May your will be done in them. Stir up within our midst a spirit of care for the people. Let this be a space in which you work to meet their needs, a place where order and safety of this state is sustained. And God, we do not just pray behind closed doors, for you come to your people even beyond locked doors. And so we pray for the communities around us. We pray for our neighbor states and their legislators. We pray for the House. We carry in this place sometimes our own personal concerns too, needs that do not persist to our jobs. And so, Lord, we place these on you now, those burdens that weigh on our hearts. May you take up these needs from us, who are weary, so that this day we may work in peace. Bless these senators, that they, in their work, may be a blessing to the people of Minnesota. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
I pledge allegiance
Thank you.
Have a lovely day.
Secretary will take the roll.
Senators Bach, Benson, Berglund, Bonhoff, Brown, Carlson, Chamberlain, Cohen, Dames, Daly, DeKreif, Dibble, Fischbach, Gazelka, Gerlach, Gimsey, Goodwin, Hall, Han, Harrington, Higgins, Hoffman, Howe, Ingebrigtsen, Jungbauer, Kielash, Koch, Cruz, Kubley, Langseth, Latz, Lilly, Limmer, Lori, Magnus, Marty, McGuire, Metzen, Michelle, Miller, Nelson, Newman, Nino, Olson, Ortman, Pappas, Perry, Peterson, Pogemiller, Reinert, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Saxog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Siebenskoy, Spark, Stump, Thompson, Tomasoni, Torres, Ray, Vandeveer, Uyghur, Wolf.
A quorum is present. Moving on to the third order of business, messages from the House. The Secretary will read the message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments to the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate file number 1115, a bill for an act relating to natural resources. Senate file number 1115 is herewith returned to the Senate. Albany Mathewich, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives. Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House refuses to concur in the Senate amendments. Oops, excuse me.
No problem. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. At this time, I move that the Senate concur with the amendments by the House to Senate file number 1115 and that the bill be placed on its passage as amended.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Senator Ingebrigtsen, an explanation.
Madam President and members, thank you. This is the invasive species bill that was passed. We talked about, had a great discussion a couple of days ago. It went over to the House. But you will notice there are some policy changes on there, some what we think are good policy changes that were added by the House. I'm certainly stand for questions if you have any. But that's basically it. And if it passes today, we're able to get the we have a good consideration from the governor's office that he will sign it and have it in place before the opener at midnight tonight.
Madam President.
Senator Rest.
Madam President, would Senator Ingebrigtsen yield?
Senator Ingebrigtsen will yield. Senator Rest.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Ingebrigtsen, you've indicated that the House made some good policy changes, but I would feel much more comfortable if I knew what they were before I voted on your motion.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, but I have been advised, Senator Rest, that there's an unofficial engrossment online available for this bill. But Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. Thank you for that question. Certainly, I can run over it really quickly here. The invasive, the 115 is going to have the Senate file 1354. That's a Gazelka bill. That's a Clean Water Partnership technical change. Senator Hoffman's bill 855. It's a closed landfill cleanup change, technical change with the MPCA. A subsurface sewage treatment system amendment that was there, that was the Dames bill. The Scheid bill, the watercraft tilting, composite material, that was an agency bill we just talked about a couple days ago. The off-highway vehicle changes, some minor changes there. That was a Gazelka bill, Senate File 1106. Senate File 692, Hall DNR technical change. There's a Senate File 1244, Dames Omnibus Policy. Wetlands Conservation Act, I know Senator Saxhog could speak to that if you'd like. Solid waste permits up to 10 years is included in that. Environmental permit coordination. Consumptive use of water. Senate File 776, that's a Rosen bill. That's a PCA regulation of aquatic pesticide use, as well as a Rosen bill, EAWs for ethanol and biobutanol conversion. The added to it is the bill that I brought forward, this adopt a WMA for sportsmen's groups to be able to voluntarily work with the DNR to help manage wildlife management areas, and a Senator Miller non-resident off-road vehicle trail pass. Senator Rest, I know you're concerned about the EIS bill. I think in particular, one change that they did make is they actually dropped the fines back down to where they were. They weren't doubled as they were in my bill. Talking with the DNR, they were happy with that. They were okay with that. We can change that later. It's not so much, I think, the enforcement as they wanted to get the policy rolling, and that was fine. We worked that out. But I think it's something we should really address later on and get a little tougher with that.
Before that, Senator Rest, I have Senator Bach.
President, Madam President, I think I still have the floor.
I am allowed to call on who I wish, and Senator Bach was waiting, and I believe he has a point of parliamentary. Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam President. I would like to move that the Senate do not concur in the amendments to House File 1115 and that a conference committee of five members be appointed by the Subcommittee on Conference Committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
Senator Bach has moved not to concur on Senate File 1115.
Madam President, to my motion.
Discussion on that motion.
Madam President, I voted for Senator Ingebrigtsen's bill when it left the Senate. But members, what came back from the House is Senator Ingebrigtsen's bill, and the House amended his bill before, you know, as it left here. But members, it came back with 14 House files attached to it. 14 separate bills the House added to Senator Ingebrigtsen's bill. In addition, five additional amendments that the House added to Senator Ingebrigtsen's bill. You know, four of those bills that the House added to this don't even have a Senate companion. Members, this is a bicameral legislature. The Senate has a duty and a responsibility to participate in the process of passing laws and sending them to the governor. It is simply wrong for the Senate to allow the House to add 14 separate bills to one of ours and additional amendments, and some of those bills not even having a companion in the Senate, and then we simply just concur with the work of the House with no discussion here in this body. Members, this bill needs to go to a conference committee. I can't ever remember a time where I have seen something like this, where the Senate has just turned control of the legislative process over to the House. Members, if we're going to continue down this road, We might as well have a unicameral legislature. I urge you strongly to send this bill to conference committee, and Madam President, I'd like a roll call vote.
Roll call has been requested. Roll call granted. Further discussion on the motion to not concur. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. And members, the 15 amendments he's talking about, 13 of them I just went over, those were Senate bills. Those were Senate discussed in committee bills. For him to, for Senator Bach to say that we've not had any discussion at it, I think is a tad bit disingenuous. Now, in working with the House, there were some other amendments that were added to it. One was actually taken off, as I explained to Senator Rest, with regards to the fines. But over in the House, they're having a hard time with this raising of the fines and doubling the fines, and that was a compromise between myself and the leadership or the author of the bill over there. But again, members, the ones I talked to you about were Senate amendments that were added to that, to this bill. And members, this is the Aquatic Invasive Species Bill, and I know the governor is looking forward to signing this. He's worked with us, his office has worked with us a lot here in the past. It was one of his initiatives starting the year here, and worked very hard on this, and I think it's a good bill. I don't think there's any hiding of anything going on here. Some policy that, again, that has been repeated, has been gone over the committee process here in the Senate, and I would ask to not vote with Senator Bach on this motion.
Further discussion, Senator Bach.
Well, Madam President, in my short little review of it, one of the provisions in there that causes me some trouble is when the dams bill left the Senate, there was a provision in it for Lutzen Mountains up in Cook County relative to the Poplar River. And Senator Goodwin offered a motion to modify the Senate language, and it failed. Members of this Senate voted against the Goodwin Amendment. The Senate has a position against that language. What came back from the House is the language of the Goodwin Amendment that the Senate has voted against. So does the Senate position mean nothing? We have a position against the provision in the bill. Now, it seems to me we ought to go to conference committee and discuss that with the House, not take their provision after the Senate actually has had a vote and rejected it. And I don't know how many other provisions in the bill are like that, but members, if there ever was a case to send a bill to conference committee, there is no urgency with this. The governor is up in Grand Rapids. It's not as though he's going to sign this afternoon. There's no reason there can't be a conference committee today, and this bill can't be conferred and put back on the floor tomorrow. And then when the governor gets back here next week, it'd be able to be signed. But members, this is not a good process to be able to let the House write a significant legislation like this without input from the Senate.
Further discussion. Senator Pogemiller.
Would Senator Ingebrigtsen yield, please?
Senator Ingebrigtsen will yield. Senator Pogemiller.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, did I understand that you said you've been working closely with the governor's office on this bill and that they will sign the bill as it has been presented to the Senate?
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Pogemiller, you know... You know that the governor certainly has the opportunity not to sign this. If I left with that impression, why I said that is that I know this is one of his initiatives, and he's very interested in moving forward with the aquatic invasive species portion of this bill, specifically that. No, I have got no indication that he's going to sign the bill. I can't come on the floor and say that he would sign the bill, but I think it's a very good chance that he does have that, and... So, Madam President, if I could address Senator Bach's issue.
Certainly. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. And Senator Bach, the issue you're talking about, the Goodwin Amendment that was on the floor, that was also, I believe that was also tried in one of our committees and failed there as well. And but if you recall the discussion on the floor and the amendment on the floor for the Lutzen water drawing from the river that they've been doing for years, which is in your district, her amendment actually was a lot tighter down. It was a lot more restrictive for the business up there. It was a two-year sunset. We actually went and compromised with the House to give Lutzen a five-year window. So it's actually better for you and your district, and I think it gives business a little bit better time to be able to work with the DNR, and the DNR was very cooperative with that. I guess they should be, because they've been letting this go on for an awful lot of years. So you know the story there. I think you know the history, but this is actually better, I think, than the Goodwin amendment for business. So I don't know that should stop the bill.
Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would Senator Ingebrigtsen yield for a question? There's a provision in there relating to ATVs, and how does that compare with the provision that I think is in the Senate Transportation bill? And I'm just wondering if the two of them are the identical language.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. I'm being told by staff that that's the basically the same, Senator Stumpf, as the one that's in the transportation. Somewhat same. That's all right. I can do a little further checking if you would like.
Senator Stumpf.
Mr. President, Senator Ingebrigtsen, I had been told yesterday that the two of them were not identical, and the provision that the House has is much more restrictive than the provision the Senate Transportation Bill has. So I'm just wondering that if this would happen to pass and the governor would sign it, I think the part of the industry would like to have the Senate language, not the House language.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you. And Senator Stumpf, the Department of Transportation apparently has been worked, I've been told, has been worked on with this amendment to an agreeable portion. Now, you and I did talk about this yesterday, and you said it was in the transportation bill. And I think you said you were okay with that language, so I guess it certainly still could be worked out to your liking there. But apparently, the House had worked on that with the transportation to come to some agreement.
Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Ingebrigtsen, what's really troubling to me, and maybe you can help me with what these provisions are. But in the case of the House files where there is no Senate companion at all, a House file 908, modifications to the Wetland Conservation Act, there is no Senate companion. House file 1205, county park fees, there is no Senate companion bill. House file 1243, the White Bear Lake Conservation District, where there is no Senate companion bill. And House file 1451, the Shallow Lakes Report, where there is no Senate companion bill. Senator Ingebrigtsen, I think members of the Senate, and certainly members that serve on the committees where these bills have been referred, should know what those House bills were about before members of the Senate are asked to just adopt a House file into law that never even had a Senate companion or had any discussion here. I think it would only be fair for you to tell us what those bills are and what they do for members of the Senate and the appropriate committee members.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. President. And Senator Bach, the first one you talked about was discussed in Senator Dames's bill on the floor just within the last 2 days, and some of the other ones I have as well. So I guess I know Senator Saxog has a portion in here that was that was very important to him with regards to Wetland Conservation Act changes. So I'm not sure where he stands on this, but again, members, we're not, you know, I think it's a good bill. The majority of it, I think, is in fact, the largest majority of this has been discussed here in the Senate chamber just recently, and I know an awful lot of things are coming at us at different speeds here, but folks, this is a good bill. We need to get this out for opening fishing. We need the governor to look at this seriously, and as he has starting out this session, I just think it's the right time to get this going and send a message to the folks out there that are asking us for this aquatic, especially this aquatic area here, to get this done and start addressing this issue. So again, I would vote against the Bach motion.
Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Mr. President. I urge people to support the Bach amendment. I believe it was well known that the Senate and House were going to try to put the aquatic invasive species bill out to the governor so it could be signed in time for fishing opener. So we did our part. We sent the bill. Most of us voted for it. We sent it to the House, and it comes back as a Christmas tree. It's got all manner of nonsense in it. Senator Ingebretson calls it a good bill, but we don't know. We know that there's 14 bills that have been added onto this. There's wetland problems in here. I want to know what the actual effect on the wetlands in the state is before anybody just says, oh, this is a good bill, and we should pass it. I don't know why the House couldn't just do its job, pass the Aquatic Invasive Species Bill, get it to the governor, and get him signed. What's the governor going to do with this? What's he going to do with this? All but about three pages of it has nothing to do with the aquatic invasive species problem that we have in our state. This is nonsense. Send it to a conference committee so we can take care and do our jobs.
I have Senator Latz and then Goodwin. Senator Latz.
Mr. President, members, it sounds like Senator Ingebrigtsen said he essentially pre-conferred this bill on his own with the House, because he said with regard to the Goodwin Amendment language that's in there that the Senator Goodwin's amendment was 2 years, and Senator Ingebrigtsen talked with the House and they made it 5 years. And, well, you know, that's all fine and good, but that cut every other member of the Senate out of the process. That's not the way this process is supposed to work. You know, it's different if you've got a small bill and you got three items or something need to be cleaned up and they're directly related to the bill that we all discussed and passed on the Senate floor. But when you're talking about a bill that's this big and this significant, where the core of the bill is easily agreed upon, and that's the urgent part, is the core of the bill, but all this other stuff gets loaded onto it, that's cutting us out of the process. That's not the right process to go through, Senator Ingebrigtsen and members of the Senate. If this is a way to try to shortcut the process and slip all of this past us, well, that's not a good way to go about doing things in the legislature, let alone in the Senate. In fact, what it ends up being is a way to cut the public out of the process, too, because we would have had a short discussion here on the Senate floor, no opportunity for the public and the members of the lobbyist community and the interest groups that are interested to sit in a conference committee room and to testify at the table. I like this House provision. I don't like this House provision. I prefer the Senate language on this. Every one of us who's been in conference committees know that we can sit there, we can go over one line for 15, 20 minutes trying to come up with the right language because of the policy implications. That obviously doesn't happen when you come to the floor with a bill that is I don't know how many pages long here. It's got a couple, four pages of repealers on it, 54-page bill. When we saw this in Senate Judiciary, it was not 54 pages long. We could spend the next 3 hours deconstructing. Here, it was 15 pages when it left the Senate. 15 pages when it left the Senate. It's coming back as a 54-page bill. Now, we can spend the next 3 hours deconstructing this bill and having Senator Ingebrigtsen and others explain in detail every one of those provisions that came back from the House that we did not pass on the Senate floor as a part of this bill. And we can have a full discussion of that just like we would in committee or in conference committee. Or you could spend the same time taking this bill to conference and doing the process right. And if this is going to happen on other bills, we're going to have the same big floor fight over it, members. Because we can't allow the process to run this way. And so I encourage, whether you are in the majority or the minority in this body, if you sit on a committee that didn't get to fully vet all the provisions that are in this bill, you are being cut out of this process too. That's why we have conference committees, members. We should send this to conference committee.
Senator Goodwin?
Will Senator Ingebrigtsen yield?
Senator Ingebrigtsen will yield.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, on the provision, on the Lutzen provision, the water provision, is that something that the anglers and the DNR agreed to?
Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Madam President and members, yes, that is something that was worked out between the DNR and the interested parties. Now, one would think that a 5-year is quite a bit different than a 2-year, but we certainly think, and I think Senator Bach would agree that a 5-year window period to be able to, for business to be able to work on getting and the resolve to this problem was, members, if you remember, the amendment was to work on getting the business of Lutzen Ski Resort to draw water from the lake and no longer from the trout stream, as they are doing now for their golf course. So the answer is yes.
Any further discussion? Senator Polgemiller.
Mr. President, would Senator Ingebrigtsen yield?
Senator Ingebrigtsen will yield.
Senator, I'm unclear. I do understand that the bill has grown from apparently 15 pages to 50 pages. But I'm unclear as to whether the issues that are in the bill that were not in it when they left the Senate were dealt with on the Senate floor and have now been added to the bill, or whether they were just dealt with in hearings or not heard at all in the Senate. That would make a difference to me. If they were issues that had been dealt with on the Senate floor, there was a Senate position. I understand on the Goodwin Amendment there that is slightly different than what left the Senate floor. I'm more interested now in just all these other provisions. Are they things that actually were dealt with on the Senate floor in some fashion, or are they things that the House dealt with but the Senate did not deal with on the Senate floor?
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Senator, thank you, Mr. President. Senator Pogemiller, the majority of them were dealt here on the floor and some in the House. Now, members, let me tell you that the vote over in the House on this particular bill was 95 to 37. So there's been a lot of work that's gone into this, but at this time, obviously, the body's having a problem with this, and I would certainly encourage the members to vote with the Bach motion. That would be fine. We'd certainly bring it to conference committee.
Any further discussion? Senator Bach moved that the Senate do not concur in the amendment by the House to Senate File 1115 and that a conference committee of 5 members be appointed by the Subcommittee on Conference Committees as part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House. A roll call has been requested. Secretary, take the roll. Secretary will close the roll. Being there 64 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails. Third order of business continuing, Secretary.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House refuses to concur in the Senate amendments to House File Number 186. House File 186, a bill for an act relating to driver's licenses. The House respectfully requests that the Conference Committee of 3 members be appointed thereon. Erdahl, Detmer, and Conan have been appointed as such committee on the part of the House. House File 186 is herewith transmitted to the Senate with a request that the Senate appoint a like committee. Albany Mathewich, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Senator Daley.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate accede to the request of the House for a conference committee on House File Number 186, and that a conference committee of 3 members be appointed by the Subcommittee on Conference Committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On the Daley motion, explanation, Senator Daley.
Mr. President, there is a small typo, and it will be very easy and very quick to be able to coordinate our efforts to resolve this issue.
On the Daley motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Fourth order of business, first reading of House Bill, Senator Koch. Fifth order of business, reports of committees. Senator Koch.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the committee reports printed in the agenda be adopted with the exception of the report pertaining to appointments.
On that motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Mr. President.
Senator Koch.
And I move that the report pertaining to appointments be laid on the table.
On that motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Sixth order of business, second reading of Senate bills. As reported on the agenda. Second reading. Eighth order of business, introduction and first reading of Senate bills. As noted on the agenda, give its first reading. Ninth order of business, motions and resolutions. Senator Senjum moved that the name of Senator Nelson be added as a co-author to Senate File Number 1421. On that motion, all in favor say aye. Opposed, same sign. Senator Koch.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would now move for a brief recess for the purpose of caucusing because of the picture this morning. So we'll do a half an hour. We'll say a quarter till. And Republicans will meet in room 107. Senator Bach.
Senator Bach.
Mr. President, DFLers will caucus immediately in room 112.
On that motion for the recess, all in favor? Just a minute.
Okay, members, we just have an announcement. There was some vial of medication in the ladies' restroom, and it's now missing. And so if anyone picked it up and they know of it, if you could get that to either Senator Rest or Senator Scheid, that would be wonderful. Thank you.
On the motion for recess, all in favor? Aye. Opposed, same sign. We are in recess.
Madam President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail, and the Sergeant will be instructed to bring in the absent members. Remaining under motions and resolutions, Senator Koch.
Thank you, Madam President. Pursuant to Rule 26, I can designate the following bills be made special orders for immediate consideration. House File 1326 and Senate File 1125.
97. If we could start with House File 1326, number 120, on your general orders.
Thank you, Senator Cope. We will begin with House File 1326, Senator Gerlach.
Well, thank you, Madam President. Members, this is the omnibus liquor bill, as it's become known over the years. And those of you who have not participated in this process, of course, every year we take a collection of the various different liquor regulation pieces, things that people need for their districts, things that different liquor regulation issues that are out there dealing with the three-tier system or anything at all, and we have heard those all as a collection of bills in the committee. And as a committee, we put together a bill that we think reflects a good balance of all the interested parties. We've worked out a lot of different negotiations and have come up with a very good bill, and it's a conglomeration of a handful of different members' bills. So what I would like to do is go through and explain what these are, and I can answer some of the questions. If you get technically into one of the aspects of it, I will defer to the original author of that bill. So members, first off, sections 1, 2, 3, and 5 deal with micro distilleries. And the issue here is that we have two distillers in the state of Minnesota, and the barrier to entry into the marketplace is very high. And in fact, the license fee required is $30,000. And that's one piece, certainly, that government can deal with to reduce that barrier. And this was a Senator Magnus provision. So he put together a tiered system to allow for smaller micro distilleries to enter into the marketplace at a much more manageable level and get started and build their business. Section 4 of the bill deals with a brewer taproom license. And you may recall a lot of emails you've received. This is the so-called Surly bill, a provision that Senator Scheid has introduced and carried. And it is a provision that has been worked out to a point of compromise with all of the parties concerned, with the wholesalers, the MLBA, the MMBA, as well as the individuals that were pursuing this legislation, which will allow for some a limited use of some sales of the beer at actual breweries. Section 6 deals with auto racing facilities, and this was a Senator Roebling provision. She came in with a request that the city of Shakopee be allowed a liquor license at their racing facility, and the committee discussed this and said, well, rather than a piecemeal approach of offering up just for this particular racetrack, that it made sense to allow this type of a license for any other racetrack that would be there. So we broadened the scope of her provision a little bit, but it certainly takes care of her need as well. Section 7 is a Senator Howe provision. He had introduced a bill dealing with a wine festival. The individuals in Minnesota who produce wine wanted the ability to get together and market their products at a state wine festival. Under current law, they could do that, and they could certainly they could offer up their products. I believe it was on sale, but they could not sell anything off sale. So people visiting this wine festival could not take anything home with them. And we decided that it was an appropriate level to allow limited off sale, and that would be no more than 2 bottles per customer, per vendor. And so that seemed like a good way to promote these businesses. And Senator Howe had worked with the interested parties and worked out some of the interstate commerce constitutional issues, as well as a tighter definition of what constitutes the groups that can get together and get this license through the Department of Public Safety. So he had reached some good compromise on that piece. Section 8 is for the Metropolitan Airports Commission, And this was a piece that was added in the Finance Committee, and the Metropolitan Airports Commission has regulations governing the layout of their liquor facilities or their bars, restaurants, on the concourses at the airport. They're doing a remodeling and needed some modifications to the layout of the how compact or contiguous their seating was, and so we've allowed for them to facilitate that change they needed. Section 9 was the temporary on-sale licenses for farm wineries at county fairs. This was a Senator Benson provision here. And Section 10 has two parts to it. And the first one was a bill that I had carried on behalf of the private colleges to allow them some liquor licenses at their alumni events. The second portion of that was an amendment I offered in committee on behalf of the city of Moorhead and also at the request of Senator Langseth to allow for a situation in that we have current law that says that there cannot be a liquor establishment within 1,500 feet of certain higher education institutions. Doesn't apply to all of them, doesn't apply to private colleges, but a handful. And when one of those institutions purchases some additional property, the boundaries have to be changed, and it looks more like a redistricting map than it does any sort of a rational public policy. So we looked at that, and instead of just automatically granting that request to alter the boundaries, we decided that it was in the best interest that we could just remove the current law and statute that says that you have a 15-foot provision. And so that is in there, a repeal of the 1,500-foot provision. Then also we have – I'm sorry, the 1,500-foot provision was Section 11 of the bill. And lastly, Section 12 was the White Bear Township authority to issue licenses, and that was a Senator Chamberlain provision. And then I guess there's one more item. You'll remember that Senator Gimsey came forward with a bill that he needed to have passed dealing with summer collegiate baseball licenses. And one piece that was left off on that was an effective date. And so this bill simply puts an effective date in law for his bill, which has already previously been passed off the floor and also signed into law by the governor. So members, those are the provisions within the omnibus liquor bill. I think it's a good balance of all of those who want more of consumer choices in what is offered, and also retains, I think, a significant framework of our regulatory framework of liquor with the three-tier system, and I would certainly stand for any questions.
Further discussion on House File 1326. Senator Latz.
Members, I have the A50 amendment.
Senator Latz offers the A50 amendment. The Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Latz moves to amend House File 1326 as amended pursuant to Rule 45 and adopted by the Senate May 12, 2011, as follows. Page 6 after line 3, insert. This is the A50 amendment.
To the amendment, Senator Latz.
Thank you, members. The A50 amendment would allow liquor stores to sell clothing marked with their own name, brand, or identifying logo of the liquor store out of their own liquor stores. There are a few exceptions to the exclusive sell alcohol only provision for our local liquor stores. In this case, in St. Louis Park, there's a beer specialty store called the Four Firkins that wants to be able to sell T-shirts that say the Four Firkins on it. Or baseball caps or biking jerseys. And this is not a core product, so it shouldn't really be an issue of whether this is appropriate to cross the regulatory line or not. There's no one else that is going to be willing to sell the Four Firkins T-shirts, for example. The retailers, I understand, have no problem with this proposal. I would encourage your support for this. It's a good way of marketing for your local small business retailers. Every Lots of little retail spots and corners in your districts have these little liquor stores, and if they want to build their brand, this is a good way to do it. Since there's no one else, frankly, that's going to sell their stuff, it shouldn't pose any problem with regarding to competition or anything like that. So I'd ask for your support, members.
Further discussion to the A50 amendment. Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, this LATS bill was heard in committee. It was not included in the omnibus bill, and it was offered up in committee as an amendment and was not adopted, and it was also offered in the Finance Committee, also was not adopted. And I would just say this, although it's certainly not a earth-shattering change in public policy, however, you should know that there is a delicate balance between what liquor stores are allowed to sell and what they're not allowed to sell, and what other retail or other establishments are allowed and not allowed to sell. And there's a very tight listing in our current statute, and those very narrow exceptions all are directly related to liquor. And these are exclusive liquor stores as defined in statute for a reason, that they are, and that's why we don't grant a lot of exceptions. And they would be things, say, for example, a corkscrew or ice or things that are directly related to the consumption of the product. And so it was that reason that I thought that there just wasn't sufficient justification to open up the list wider to what are considered broader retail items. There is nothing in statute that says that a liquor store could not, as part of its marketing budget, give away imprinted T-shirts or hats. They're generally very inexpensive, or offer them up with along as with other products or for free. They just can't sell them for profit, and that's what being an exclusive liquor store is about. You're selling liquor. So for that, members, I would urge you to vote against the LATS amendment.
Further discussion on the A50 amendment. Senator Latz.
Members, just an additional thought or two. You have distributed to your desks a letter from the owner of the Four Firkins, which has some interesting explanation in there that I hope you take a look at before you decide on how to vote for this. I would also note that among the products that are already allowed to be sold in liquor stores are tobacco products, which have absolutely nothing to do with the consumption of liquor. You don't need them to open the bottle. And also magazines that are related to liquor, information and education on alcoholic beverage. But those are magazines. You don't need to have the magazine to be able to consume your liquor. This would be related to the liquor. It would have the logo of the liquor store on it. That's the only thing that would be on there. They couldn't sell any other branded merchandise. And so it really is entirely consistent with the list of exceptions that are already in statute. And I think this is a good opportunity to support the small business retailers that are in your districts. So I don't think we have to worry about any slippery slope or any inappropriate crossing of the lines here. If they can sell liquor books, if they can sell liquor magazines, and if they can sell cigarettes, certainly they ought to be able to sell liquor logos or liquor logoed T-shirts and baseball caps. I don't think it's a threat to anyone, let alone the integrity of the statute. I'd ask for your support. Thank you.
Further discussion on the A50 amendment. Senator Wieger.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Would Senator Gerlach yield?
Senator Gerlach will yield. Senator Wieger.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Gerlach, I hadn't thought about this subject until it was just brought up, but thinking of a couple of local establishments in my district and the thought that you are opposed to this amendment, I'm wondering if you'd entertain support if the apparel that's branded was distributed at cost. In your testimony, you indicated it should not be sold for profit, but otherwise as something that is given away as long as it's not for profit. So if the apparel was distributed at cost, would that soften your opposition?
Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Madam President, and Senator Wigger. I appreciate your attempt to try to moderate this a little bit. I probably misspoke a little bit when I said for profit. It's about selling it at all. And there's nothing in current law saying that they couldn't give it. But I also think that saying selling it at cost would be probably extraordinarily difficult, if not impossible, to enforce something like that as well. So I think I would oppose your suggestion.
Further discussion on the A50 amendment? Seeing none, Senator Latz renews his motion to adopt the A50 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on House File 1326. Secretary will give House File 1326 its third reading.
House File 1326, a bill for an act relating to liquor, third reading.
Further discussion, Senator Stumpf.
Madam President, under Rule 41.2, I'd like to be excused from voting on this.
It is noted, Senator Stumpf. Further discussion on House File 1326. It's a motion. On Senator Stump's motion to be excused from voting, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Further discussion? Seeing none, the Secretary will take the roll on House File 1326.
Probably be kind of a little human interest for you. You're on the wrong side of history on that one.
Well, they had that when we were on break.
I had heard it was, I thought it was going to be earlier than that, but.
That was Easter break, so nobody's here. You
now
guys are all.
Now the old fart's making $75,000 a year working for the.
Senator Perry votes yes. Senator Fischbach votes yes.
Got my stuff in there.
But share it with other people.
Leroy, can I pay you back for some of your?
All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll, There being 60 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Remaining under motions and resolutions, Senator Koch.
Madam President, I move that we take up the general orders calendar.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Koch.
Members, just as a scheduling note, we'll be going back to the special order of the energy policy bill, but we'll move to general orders at this time for scheduling. I move that the Senate do now resolve itself into a committee of the whole for the purposes of taking up the general orders calendar.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Koch.
Members, you have a list of general orders in front of you. I would just add one. Senate File 721, number 42 on your general orders, and that could just follow number 41 on the list, and that is a Senator Scheid bill.
Thank you, Senator Koch. We are on general orders. First bill we'll be taking up is number 83 on the general orders list, House File 1341, Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, House File 1341 be recommended to pass.
To that motion, Senator Benson.
House File 1341 is a simple addition to our forecast. It is breaking out one line of an existing line to reflect the services provided to children aged birth to 22 years, separated from the expenditures currently listed as families with children. And I'll stand for questions.
Further discussion on House File 1341. Seeing none, Senator Benson renews her motion that when this committee do arise, House File 1341 be recommended to pass. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving on to the next special order, we have number 80, general order, I'm sorry, and I'm looking at the wrong list. Number 84 on your general orders calendar, Senate File 1265, Senator Peterson.
Madam President, I move that when the committee do arise, Senate File 1265 be recommended to pass.
To that motion, Senator Peterson.
Yes, Madam President and members, this bill addresses an issue that became apparent in a recent court case in the last couple years. This bill provides for Minnesota's drug testing law to recognize labor agreements for professional athletes. It's important so that these athletes have the same requirements throughout the country in regard to drug testing. This is relates to their agreement, their collective bargaining agreement between the employer and the employees. Currently, I think most members are aware that they have a very significant and robust drug testing policy in their agreements, which clearly exceed our state requirements in certain instances. There's no known opposition to this bill, and it has been reviewed by the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, the AFL-CIO, the Department of Labor and Industry, as well as all the local major sports teams. And I would encourage members to extend their support to this bill.
Further discussion, Senator Rest.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also rise to support Senator Peterson's bill. We did have legislation a few years back that was similar as regards the Major League Baseball. So this is just putting it in the same relationship to of their collective bargaining agreement to the state law with regard to professional athletes and drug testing.
Further discussion, Senator Howe.
Madam Chair, I move to amend Senate File 1265. I have the A5 amendment.
Senator Howe offers the A5 amendment. The Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Howe moves to amend Senate File 1265 as follows, page 1, line 16, after the period insert. This is the A5 amendment.
To the amendment, Senator Howe.
Madam Chair, we heard this in committee and This law does create somewhat of a provisional loophole that I think my amendment will address. This subdivision must not be construed to create an exemption from the controlled substance crime in Chapter 152. So this would take care of that. I reached out to the author and to other people. It is supported, and I would ask the chief author to speak to it.
Further discussion on the A5 amendment, Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam President and members. Thank you, Senator Howe, for recognizing this loophole. I think the goal Senator Howe is trying to accomplish this is to keep these professional sports that we enjoy watching pure, and making sure that there isn't an opportunity for management to change and allow them to use controlled substances that would alter their performance, and this would prevent that from happening. So we would consider a friendly amendment and encourage members to support it.
Further discussion on the A5 amendment? Seeing none, Senator Howe renews his motion to adopt the A5 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Further discussion on Senate File 1265. Seeing none, Senator Peterson renews his motion. When this committee do arise, Senate File 1265 be recommended to pass. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving on to the next general order, we have number 92 on the general orders calendar, House File 721, Senator Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, House File number 721 be recommended to pass.
To that motion, Senator Brown.
Madam Chair, this bill makes two changes to disability parking permit statutes. First, it allows a certificate to be displayed from the rearview mirror or anywhere on the dashboard, not just on the driver's side as is current statute. And second, it reins in the misuse and abuse of expired permits and placards in the possession of someone other than the original owner. This bill passed unanimously through committee, and I stand for questions.
Further discussion on House File 721. Seeing none, Senator Brown renews his motion that when this committee do arise, House File 721 be recommended to pass. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving on, we have Senator. Remaining on the general orders calendar, next we will take up is number number 37, House File 493, Senator Senchum.
Thank you, Madam President. It's good to be here.
Glad you made it.
Madam President, members.
Senator Senchum, you should make your motion first if that's...
Madam President, I move that when the committee do arise, House File 493 be recommended to pass.
To that motion, Senator Senchum.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 493 is frankly a relatively simple bill. It's came to me through the Minnesota Auto Dealers Association. Department of Public Safety is supporting it, and I learned this morning that the Highway Patrol has signed off it. It's really relatively simple. It has to do with, for instance, a rental car company that has a fleet and which might typically register their cars on 3-4 month cycles, if you will. When those cards are sold, this bill would then require that, and this sounds really, frankly, rather normal to me, but the new license plate or the new license fee would be for 12 months. Frankly, I would have thought that's the way it is. But there is some confusion there, and this bill rectifies that confusion. The other thing that it does, the second provision within the bill, it would allow a dealership that had multiple sites to maintain their vehicle records in one location rather than at each site. And again, with the advancement of computerization, digital scanning and so on, and the ability to deliver records to places rather quickly, it creates some efficiencies which dealers, again, that have multiple sites would appreciate having. So that's the essence of the bill. It's pretty simple. I'd certainly stand for questions.
Further discussion on House File 493. Seeing none, Senator Senjum renews his motion. When this committee do arise, House File 493 be recommended to pass. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving on, we have number 42 on general orders, Senate File 172. Senator Scheid.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 172 be recommended to pass.
To that motion, Senator Scheid.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill went through two committees. It's pretty straightforward, simple little bill, but it did go through the Environment Committee and, in fact, is one of the bills that was part of the House omnibus bill. The watercraft titling piece that Senator Ingebrigtsen described had been added to his omnibus bill. And then it also went to Judiciary. And what it does is conform how we issue the title to watercraft. Currently, that title is sent to the securing party. So the bank gets it, and the bank can be someplace in Arizona, as happened with a constituent of mine, and he never got the title. But he got his title for his motor vehicle that pulls the boat through the mail. So we're just going to now mail those titles to the owner of the property. That's all it does. It simplifies things and makes a lot of sense, and the DNR was very supportive of the change. It just got overlooked when motor vehicle titles, how we do that process, was changed a few years ago. They didn't address how we handle people's boats. So, thank you.
Further discussion on Senate File 172. Seeing none, Senator Scheid renews her motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 172 be recommended to pass. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Continuing on general orders, number 41, House File 387, Senator Newman.
Madam President, what's the Senate file number on that? I've got 3. I've got it, Madam President. One moment, please. Thank you, Madam President. Members, this is a bill involving
Senator Newman. You need to make the motion first.
Oh, yes. Madam President, I move that when this committee do arise, House File number 387 be recommended to pass.
To that motion, Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, this bill involves a driver's license reinstatement diversion pilot project that was passed by the legislature back in 2009, and it has had some degree of success. The current bill expands and extends the driver's license reinstatement diversion project currently only cities are eligible to participate, and under this bill, the program would allow counties to participate and would also extend the sunset on the current program from June of this year until June of 2013. This particular program has allowed folks who have had their driver's licenses suspended or revoked for certain reasons. It will allow them, once they participate or begin participating in the program, so long as they conform to all of the requirements of the program, will get their license, driver's license privileges reinstated. And I think that the real reason for the original concept of the program was people get onto a treadmill of having their driving privileges revoked and then continue to drive because they can't come up with the funds necessary to get their driver's license back, and it's prohibiting them from getting to work. So this program was started. It has been a success. The county attorneys, city attorneys are in agreement with this, and the department has indicated in testimony and in committee that they are in favor of the program and do support it. And with that, Madam President, that is the information on this bill.
Further discussion on House File 387. Seeing none, Senator Newman renews his motion that when this committee do arise, House File 387 be recommended to pass. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving on, we have number 28 on general orders. It's Senate File 301. Senator Newman.
Madam President, I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File number 301 be recommended to pass.
To that motion, Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam President. This bill arose out of an incident that occurred out in my home county of McLeod County a couple of years ago. And in outstate Minnesota, we have what are called reserve police officers. They are not licensed police officers, but they act under the direct supervision of licensed police officers. For the most part, it's county sheriffs that are utilizing these reserve officer members, and they help them with things like crowd control, parking, event control, that type of thing. And what happened is that at an event, there was what are called mounted reserve officers. They do act on foot. They also have a mounted patrol. And during a crowd control, an individual operating an automobile refused to take the directions of the reserve officer and literally drove his automobile into the mounted patrol's horse. The county attorney proceeded to try and charge the individual the same as if it had been a licensed police officer on that horse, and found that there was an absence in the statute and they couldn't charge it out. And what this bill does is it recognizes the reserve officers for purposes of being either assaulted or being a mounted officer, and treats the reserve officers the same as a licensed police officer for purposes of being assaulted. And so the thing to remember on this bill is we are simply recognizing reserve officers will be treated as the same as licensed police officers if they or the mount that they are riding is assaulted by an individual. Thank you, Madam President.
Further discussion on Senate File 301. Seeing none. Oh, Senator Latz.
Madam Chair, members, this is an entirely appropriate expansion of the fourth-degree assault crime. I think it will protect the police horses and the police officers that are in control of them, and it will advance public safety. I urge your support.
Further discussion on Senate File 301. Seeing none, Senator Newman renews his motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 301 be recommended to pass. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Continuing on general orders, general orders number 35, House File 695, Senator Limmer.
Madam Chair, I move that when this committee do arise, House File number 695 be recommended to pass.
To that motion, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is in regards to city-donated public safety equipment. A municipality would be free from civil liability for donating public safety equipment to another municipality, unless, of course, a claim is the direct result of fraud or intentional misrepresentation. The purpose of this bill is to encourage the donation of public safety equipment to smaller municipalities. The supporters of the bill include the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, Minnesota State Fire Chief Association, and the Minnesota State Fire Departments Association. Some of you members who were here last year may remember this bill. It passed unanimously out of the Senate, and yet it was not heard in the House last year. That's why the bill is before us.
Further discussion on House File 695. Seeing none, Senator Limmer renews his motion that when this committee do arise, House File 695 be recommended to pass. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving on the general orders list, we have number 43, Senate File 680, Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File number 680 be recommended to pass.
To that motion, Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam President. This bill arises out of a problem that is currently going on in Minnesota and involves organized retail theft. It could be described as being akin to shoplifting, except that what happens is an organized group of individuals will go into a retail store. They will cause a diversion, and while that diversion is being addressed by store security or management, they will literally take like garbage bags and just scoop all kinds of merchandise off the shelves and leave the store, where they then put it on things like Craigslist, the internet, and sell them. And to give you an idea of how large or widespread of a problem this is, there was testimony in our committee that the Super Value grocery store chain nationwide loses about $25 million a year. In the state of Minnesota, it's $5 million a year just for that one retailer. And so what this bill does is it recognizes that this is not just shoplifting, that this is an organized crime, and will then address that organized crime under the Minnesota RICO statute. Currently, the Minnesota RICO statute does not address this type of a thing, and this bill takes that into consideration. Thank you, Madam President.
Further discussion on Senate File 680. Senator Latz.
Madam Chair, members, this is a new and growing problem and around the country, and it's a significant loss associated significant loss suffered by retailers as a result of this organized efforts to take merchandise from their stores. This is not the simple shoplifting kind of crime that we're dealing with. If it's a much more sophisticated network, and we need the additional tools in the law to be able to address these kinds of activities. So I'd encourage your support.
Further discussion on Senate File 680. Seeing none, Senator Newman renews his motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 680 be recommended to pass. All in favor say aye. Aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving on, we have number 45 on your general orders calendar, Senate File 1213. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1213 be recommended to pass.
To that motion, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this Senate file improves adult education tracking modifications. Current law, including federal law, requires that adult basic education programs track participants in order to understand the effectiveness of ABE. This legislation simply adds some additional data to be gathered by these tracking systems, such as the use of various government programs by ABE learners, such as the Diversionary Work Program and the Minnesota Family Investment Program. This legislation is supported by adult basic education and literacy advocates who believe that data is successful in program design. There is no cost, and there are no known opponents. I stand for questions.
Further discussion on Senate File 1213. Seeing none, Senator Nelson renews her motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1213 be recommended to pass. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving on, we have Senate File 288, which is number 119 on your general orders. Senator Howe.
Madam Chair, I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File number 288 be recommended to pass.
To that motion, Senator Howe.
Madam President, this bill is about safety. Safety for the patients, dentists, their staff, and their dental technicians. Currently, there are no requirements for a dental laboratory to inform dentists of what materials they've used in the fabrication of a dental crown or appliance. This bill requires that the dental laboratory to provide a list of materials they've used in the restoration for a crown, a denture, bridge, or implant to the dentist for the patient's record. This ensures that if there's ever an issue, even if it's a patient's allergy to a particular type of metal, the dentist will have the information they need to source the problem. This legislation also requires that the dental laboratory to provide the country of origin where the restoration was manufactured to the dentist. Currently, according to import data from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, in 2010, 38% of all crowns are made outside our country by foreign dental laboratories, with China producing the bulk of those crowns. If there was ever a product recall or a safety issue, no state agency or association has any way of knowing where the dental labs are located, nor what materials were used in a particular patient's crown. The Midwest Dental Laboratories Association has worked with the Minnesota Dental Association and the Minnesota Board of Dentistry to reach consensus on this bill. At the national level, the disclosure of materials and country of origin are supported by both the National Association of Dental Laboratories and the American Dental Association. Plumbers, electricians, and even barbers have to register with the state, but dentist labs do not have to, and they fabricate medical devices that are put in our bodies. This bill is revenue neutral and will help ensure patients and the dentists are provided with more safety. And Madam Chair, I do have an A7 amendment.
Senator Howe offers the A7 amendment. The Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Howe moves to amend Senate File 288 as follows. Page 1, line 10, after is insert. This is the A7 amendment.
To the amendment, Senator Howe.
Madam Chair, this amendment cleans up several words and the language in the bill. It also offers an effective date of April 1st, 2012.
Further discussion on the A7 amendment. Seeing none, Senator Howe renews his motion to adopt the A7 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Further discussion on Senate File 288. Seeing none, Senator Howe moves that when this committee do arise, Senate File 288 as amended be recommended to pass. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving on, we are on Senate File 134, number 18 on the general calendar, or on the general orders calendar. Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 134 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This bill is a fairly simple provision. It eliminates five words in current law, and it will allow the student interns over age 22 to work for more than 67 days without having to join the union. But they can only work up to 100 days under this provision. But what we are doing is we are just eliminating the words "are under the age of 22 in the current law, which states that employees are exempt from PELRA if they are in positions that are basically temporary or seasonal in character and are not for more than 100 working days in any calendar year, and the employees are full-time students enrolled in a nonprofit or educational institution prior to being hired by the employer, and have indicated, either in an application for employment or by being enrolled in an educational institution for the next academic year term, an intention to continue as students during or after their temporary employment. So you can see, members, that it is still very restrictive as to what qualifies them for this exemption. And the reason we're asking for this is because we have many, many more non-traditional students in our schools today. We have many people returning from the military who decide to take advantage of their military educational benefits and return to school and start later. I had an intern a couple of years ago who fell into this category and was still a student at the University of Minnesota when he was 26 here and was an intern. And even though he wasn't in this internship here as a paid position at all, he would have been the type of person who would qualify with this change in the law. We also have a number of people who, because of the economic situation, have returned to school and are changing careers and benefit from internships, and they would also benefit from this. And we just feel that the times are changing. It's important that we adjust our age limit and say that students can be over age 21. And so that's why we're asking for the change. This was requested by some of the local units of government, and I ask for your support.
Further discussion on Senate File 134. Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I rise in opposition to Senate File 134. It's true that under current law, there's an exemption for persons under 22. These are primarily persons as students who probably are dependents of their parents. There is not that need for benefits that you may accrue even under an internship program. By expanding this, you basically throw away a union card for anyone that might potentially get some benefits, perhaps a person that's in a working poor category, and for those adults that might benefit, this is going to take away benefits that they could accrue. There was strong opposition by labor in committee, for those of you that are interested. Concern was raised by that students are paying high tuition. Well, then let's invest more in tuition assistance. There was concern that wages are too low. Well, then let's do more to promote working livable wages. Don't burn up the union card. I urge you to vote no.
Further discussion, Senator Rest.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just request a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Roll call granted. Discussion to Senate File 134. Senator Goodwin.
Madam President, I think that this bill maybe, I'm going to make a motion here that we send this bill back to rules, because I think the Pension Commission should be looking at this bill, and at the time that Senator Roebling brought it through committees, the Pension Commission wasn't formed yet. But normally anything that's going to affect or could possibly affect pensions should be heard in that commission. Since I can't make that motion, I'll make the motion that we send it back to rules, and that that rules take a look at it and see if it should be done. What the issue is here is that people over the age of 22 can work every single summer from spring until fall, and under this provision would not be allowed to get benefits, any benefits, and they can be a regular seasonal employee. So it's not just somebody that might work one summer for 100 days and then not work again. It affects a lot more than that. So, Madam Chair, I would request a roll call vote on that, that we send this back to rules. Thank you.
Senator Goodwin has moved that Senate File 134 be stricken and re-referred to the Committee on Rules and Administration and has requested a roll call on that motion. Further discussion, Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And PARA excludes temporary employees whose position at the time of hiring is predetermined to be 6 months or less. And MSRS excludes temporary employees in the classified service. The temporary employees in the unclassified service who are appointed for a definite period of time, not more than 6 months, and who are employed less than 6 months in any one-year period, and interns who are hired for 6 months or less. In the instance of TRA, student teachers do not receive pay or benefits and thus are not covered by TRA. So, Madam Chair, I really think that Senator Goodwin's motion is not appropriate. It does not have to go to the Pension Commission because these positions would be less than 6 months, and so they would not normally be covered by pension provisions anyway. So, members, please vote against the re-referral.
Further discussion on the motion, Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Roebling, I don't remember, maybe there was a fiscal note on this, but perhaps Senator Roebling will yield and answer the question on what the cost of this would be.
Senator Roebling.
Senator Goodwin, there was not a fiscal note on it.
Senator Goodwin.
Well, Madam President, then I would suggest that we get this back to rules in order to get a fiscal note prepared, because there is going to be an impact, negative or positive, there is going to be an impact, and I'd like to know what that impact is going to be on the folks that are doing these jobs, because as I said, some people are in this temporary employment summer after summer, and I'd like to know what that fiscal impact is going to be. So I still am making my motion to send this back to rules. Thank you.
Discussion on the motion. Seeing none, a roll call has been requested. Secretary will take the roll on the motion to re-refer Senate File 134. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 30 ayes and 33 nays, the motion does not prevail. Further discussion on Senate File 134. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members, I think this bill is ill-advised, and I would encourage a negative vote. If the PELRA law is used appropriately, student workers and interns wouldn't enter a bargaining unit. However, as the criteria is now, perhaps they would receive some level of benefit, some level of wage consideration. But Madam Chair, what I'm really concerned about is that this allows the misuse of PELRA. And it feels like potentially employers could do something else, and that is try to hire folks under this pretext in order to create a lower wage workforce. And it's really not necessarily all about student summertime workers and interns and the like. It could, for example, allow the Ramsey County Nursing Home or other units of government covered by PELRA to hire workers and completely circumvent PELRA. And is that what we really want to do? Madam Chair and members, this is not a problem that we have right now. This is a solution in search of a problem. And I think that we see a real threat and a real danger to folks who are working hard to provide public services. And this feels like something else is going on. This is part of a series of efforts and bills that we're seeing one after another to undermine PELRA, to undermine public service. These folks aren't going to become a part of the bargaining unit, but they will receive some consideration in terms of their wages and benefits and the like. But if we delete these few words, we can see the doors thrown wide open to an abuse of hiring practices for folks who aren't necessarily going to be students or summertime interns.
Discussion of Senate File 132, Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And very, very few people who would fall under this category would be receiving any benefits at all. But the truth of the matter is they would also be required to pay their fair share union dues. And on the small stipend that they may be receiving for being interns, that can be a burden for these interns as well. To address Senator Dibble's concern, it isn't just lifting the age. We still have the other requirements in place that they do have to be students. They have to be students enrolled full-time before they start the job, and they have to be intending to go back to school after they end the job. And so there still is that requirement in place, which would help prevent that misuse of using these people in other capacities. Please support the bill.
Discussion, Senator Goodwin.
Madam President, I'd like to make a point of order here under Rule 21, objections to committee referrals. According to that rule, from what I'm reading here, and you can tell me, I'll ask for your opinion if I'm reading this right or wrong, but when a member requests the referral of a bill to rules, that has to be done without debate. So if that's as I think it is here, then we should be referring this to rules on my request.
Senator Goodwin, Rule 21 applies to committee reports when committee so that objection would have to be made when there was a committee report in front of us. That's not it's not applicable here.
Okay, thank you, Madam President. Then I'd just like to ask for a roll call vote.
Okay, thank you. Roll call has been requested. Further discussion on Senate File 134. Seeing none, Senator Roebling renews her motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 134 be recommended pass. Secretary will take the roll. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 35 ayes and 29 nays, the motion is adopted. Remaining under motions and resolutions,
Madam Chair, I move the committee do now arise and report.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. Motion is adopted. Senator Koch.
Madam President, I move that the report of the committee of the whole as kept by the secretary be now adopted.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion is adopted. Senator Koch.
Madam President, remaining under motions and resolutions, pursuant to Rule 26, I designate the following bill be made a special order for immediate consideration, and that is Senate File 1197.
On special orders, number 73 on the general orders calendar, Senate File 1197, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam President. This is the Omnibus Energy Policy Bill. And before I get started, I'd like to just say a special thanks to the committee. They worked very hard on this. A special thanks to Senator Benson. She has many provisions in here. To Peter Mavis, community assistant, to John Halverson, and Senate Counsel, and everybody else. They did a tremendous job on this bill. Section 1, if I can, Madam President, just step through this. The Section 1 is the Software Sale Fund. This is a Department of Energy Resources bill, a department bill. It strikes the obsolete language requiring proceeds from the sale or licensing of software products developed by the Department of Education to be credited to support weatherization activities. It's a very outdated reference because to the Department of Education when the weatherization was housed there rather than Commerce. Go figure, Madam President. It was in Department of Ed. I can't figure that one out. Section 2 is the reasonable rates, and Section 3 is the rate preference prohibitive. That's Senator Benson's provision. These two sections add class of customers to statutory language for the purpose of rate case making. Section 4 is the revenue allocation among customer classes, another Senator Benson provision. This makes it clear that when the PUC, the Public Utilities Commission, is determining revenue allocations in a rate case, the cost of service shall be the primary consideration. And we did receive a letter this week from the PUC stating very clearly that should be the primary consideration, is the cost of service. Also allows the PUC to weigh other factors, including impacts on business development and job growth. It also has revenue allocations have to be supported by record evidence. Section 5 is the Energy Emission Control Products Cost Adjustment, another Senator Benson provision, which classifies sorbents, reagents, or basically chemicals used in emission controls, as a recoverable expense through automatic adjustment of charges for electricity. It's similar to the gas and fuel, and these chemicals fluctuate in price and are not under the control of the utility. Section 6 and Section 4 is the Senator Jungbauer provision dealing with charitable contribution. It's a PUC technical language that clarifies what can be deducted as a charitable expense for a public utility. So current law right now points out to a statute that has been repealed, and this provision moves the reference to the tax statute section that deals with contributions by corporations. Section 7 is a low-income affordability program, another Senator Benson provision. She was a busy senator this year. That repeals the inverted block rates as an option from the low-income affordability program section of the law. Section 8 is a multi-year rate plan, and this provision, members, has already passed out of this body, 57-0. It gives the public utilities the option to propose a multi-year rate plan as opposed to a single test year. A multi-year plan should allow some integration of long-term projects and mitigate the use of infrastructure construction recovery through rate riders. Section 9 is the rate impact of standard compliance report, a Senator Benson provision, which requires utilities submit a report detailing the cost of complying with a renewable energy standard. Section 10 is the Energy Conservation Policy Goal, Senator Benson provision, which removes the inverted block rates from the Conservation Improvement Program statute. Section 11 is the Energy Savings Goal, Senator Benson, And right now, members, the current law requires all utilities to submit a conservation improvement program plan that provides an energy saving goals of no less than 1%. This change would allow the munis and the co-ops to submit a plan below 1% because they have had a hard time reaching that goal because of their customer base, which is extremely high in residential. This is for the small co-ops that are, again, largely residential. And the Commerce still has the authority to accept or reject the plan. I think that's very important with this also. Section 12 is the SIP program, Senator Benson, provision that modifies reporting requirements for the SIP program. This change provides Commerce the ability to audit a utility's most up-to-date activities rather than just their proposed plan. Section 13 is a transmission line project reporting, which is a department bill. This would clarify that owners of wind farms with transmission interconnect do not have to file comprehensive transmission plans. So this modification would eliminate the need for the 9 IPP wind farms from reporting, just 9 of them. Section 15 is the Energy Conservation Information Center, another department bill, which would remove the requirement that Commerce collect and maintain cold weather disconnection data. To date, they have had no request for this information. Section 16 is the Residential Weatherization Program, another department bill, that strikes language requiring Commerce to use state rules when administering state and federal weatherization assistance program funds. These funds must operate under the departments, so it's just a redundant provision, and it's in the Fed's hands right now. Section 17 is funding assessment, another department bill, that moves the requirements for the second quarter assessment done by the PUC on utilities to the third quarter. This change aligns the assessment with the fiscal year to the extent possible. And Section 18 is the repealer, Senator Benson's, repeals the natural gas inverted block rates program from the statute. This will not affect the current three-year pilot project being conducted by the CenterPoint Energy. And with that, Madam President, I do have the A4 amendment.
Senator Rosen offers the A4 amendment. The Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Rosen moves to amend Senate file Senator number 1197 as follows. At page 2 after line 4, insert. This is the A4 amendment.
To the amendment, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam President. This is actually Senator Bach's amendment. It's a good amendment. It's a co-op rate regulation vote repeal. It would repeal the statute that requires at this time for one of the of his co-ops up there, the Lake Country Power, that it requires 1% of the members to sign a petition to trigger a member vote to be rate regulated by the PUC. And we're increasing that up to the state standard, which is at 5% of the signatures. A signature of members that need to trigger a vote. So I ask you for your support. Again, this is Senator Bach's amendment.
Further discussion on the A4 amendment? Seeing none, Senator Rosen renews her motion to adopt the A4 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam President. That is the essence of the bill. Again, members, it was very well worked through, a lot of cooperation from all the departments, Commerce and the PUC, and the members of the committee, and I ask for your support. There are some other amendments, and I will ask for your support. Thank you.
Discussion to Senate File 1197. Senator Benson.
Madam President, I have the A8 amendment.
Senator Benson offers the A8 amendment. The Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Benson moves to amend Senate File 1197 as follows. Page 2 after line 4, insert. This is the A8 amendment.
To the amendment, Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam President. The amendment grants a conservation improvement program exemption for large gas users, similar to the exemption that currently exists for large electric users, gives parity for large businesses that consume energy as a significant part of their production. 500 million cubic feet of natural gas is the bar that's been set for a large user. They must also present evidence that they are engaging in their own conservation activities in order to be exempt from the conservation program. There is an additional provision that those businesses who are not large users but are proximate to an existing pipeline can be exempt so that they won't decouple from their current gas provider and join into the pipeline. That is the summary of the amendment. I'm happy to stand for questions.
Further discussion to the A8 amendment. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. President. Chair.
Chair. Oh, President, we're under special orders. I'm sorry, you got me, Senator Dibble.
Madam President, I'd like to ask for a roll call vote on this amendment.
Roll call has been requested and roll call granted. Senator Dibble.
Yeah, and Madam President, Senator Benson, we had some presentation of this issue in committee, and we already do allow fairly large users of energy exceptions and exemptions from the conservation improvement program of their utility. And I'm not understanding why would we bring that threshold further and further down. I mean, how low do we want to bring this particular threshold? The fact of the matter is that we have to think about the conservation initiatives, the conservation improvement program, as a system-wide effort. And in particular, when we've got these particular large users who could very much benefit from the information, access to resources, et cetera, the payoff there is tremendous to them, to the utility, and all classes of customers. We already have the exception, of course, for the large users, and we continue to bring this further and further down. We will miss these opportunities, and we'll see all of us paying more, throwing in new infrastructure, paying higher bills, and taking away some of the economic incentives that we have, all the jobs that are created from the conservation improvement initiatives of our utilities. So I'm not understanding why, and I feel like this is, kind of the slippery slope. We're just going to bring it further and further down. Pretty much all commercial industrial users are going to be exempted from participating in what is a tremendous benefit to them and to all of us.
Further discussion on the A8 amendment. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam President. I just want to say, just remind the committee and tell the members of this body that Fresh Energy, a lot of the environmentalists, came up and testified in the support of this provision. There was a lot of work on this compromise, and I think it's reasonable to say that the Department of Commerce, Department of Energy Resources, is satisfied with this because we added the provision that requires a third-party audit to verify that the customer has made cost-effective conservation. That's on page 6, line 2, paragraph E. An audit or other report prepared by an independent third party with the expertise in energy conservation shall be prepared verifying that the customer has taken reasonable and appropriate measures to implement cost-effective conservation improvements. This was the agreement by everybody going forward, and they did not express any concerns about this in committee.
Further discussion to the A8 amendment. Seeing none, Senator Benson renews her motion that the A8 amendment be adopted. The Secretary will take the roll.
Madam President, I'll withdraw my request for a roll call vote.
Senator Dibble, can... Senator Dibble, Senator Dibble withdraws his motion for a roll call. Senator Benson renews her motion on the A8 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The A8 amendment is adopted. Further discussion to Senate File 1197. Senator Howe.
Madam President, I offer the A3 amendment to Senate File 1197.
Senator Howe offers the A3 amendment. The Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Howe moves to amend Senate File 1197 as filed as page 5 after line 4. Insert. This is the A3 amendment.
To the amendment, Senator Howe.
Madam President, the reason this amendment is necessary is because the federal government has failed to live up to its promises to remove highly radioactive nuclear waste from our state. This amendment simply makes sure that our Public Utility Commission is looking at the long-term cost should the federal government never pick up the waste, and secondly, that we, the legislative bodies, are informed every 3 years of the cost to Minnesota ratepayers of the federal government's for not removing waste from Prairie Island and Monticello. We need to start pushing back on the federal government. This amendment will bring to light the costs of Minnesota ratepayers for the federal government's failure to accept nuclear waste at Prairie Island and Monticello. The decommissioning process review is already underway, and there is no fiscal cost to this amendment.
Further discussion on the A3 amendment. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise in support of this amendment. I think this is a good measure. We had significant conversations about this in committee going forward, and I think this is a very acceptable amendment.
Further discussion, Senator Sharon.
Thank you. I would rise also and encourage my colleagues to vote for this amendment. This has been not only an issue this year, but for several years we've been concerned about the fact that the federal government has not resolved the issue in terms of storage of waste, that we have communities that are taking higher responsibility than other communities to take care of the storage of this waste, that we ought to be able to calculate what the cost will be and change those assumptions that waste will be out of this state within a certain period of time. So this offers an opportunity, and I thank Senator Howe for forwarding this again, that this is an action that we've needed to take for a long time in terms of dealing with waste that already exists in our state.
Discussion to the A3. Oh, Senator Marty.
Madam President, this may be a good amendment, but it also points out the high cost of nuclear power, the reason we shouldn't be repealing our moratorium. Just a reminder that it's extremely expensive if you take away all the subsidies that government provides in terms of the insurance, in terms of the waste. And since we have no solution to the waste, this is going to be an incredibly high cost. So documenting it may be good. It'd be smarter not to repeal our moratorium.
Discussion to the A3. Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Madam President. I rise in support of the A3 amendment. Now I'm getting confused. And I completely agree with Senator Marty's points. This points out, it pains me to support this because it points out the truth of the matter, but I thank Senator Howe for bringing this forward. We do need to have good information about what exactly it's going to cost to hang on to this fuel, particularly as plants start to reach the end of their lives.
Discussion to the A3. Seeing none, Senator Howe renews his motion to adopt the A3 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The A3 is adopted. Further discussion on Senate File 1197. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam President. I have the A5 amendment.
Senator Carlson offers the A5 amendment. The Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Carlson moves to amend Senate File 1197 as follows. Page 5 after line 4, insert. This is the A5 amendment.
To the A5 amendment, Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam President. The purpose of the A5 amendment is to clarify that the federal hydropower from the Western Area Power Administration, better known as WAPA, does not count as a retail sale in the calculation of Minnesota renewable energy standards. Members, there's about 44 co-ops in the state. 27 of those co-ops use some amount of power from WAPA. Of those 27 co-ops, 15 of those co-ops have the accounting for the energy flow through directly to those co-ops. 12 of those co-ops, however, aggregate that amount of energy in their generating and transmission co-ops. And so back in 2007, when they passed the Renewable Energy Standard Act, there was a little technical glitch that wasn't anticipated, and so from the PUC standpoint, they realized that they needed to have this technical language changed so that those 12 co-ops that aggregated their hydropower in the GNTs can have those that amount of power reduced from their retail sales. It's basically a reduction of the numerator when calculating the standard to get to the 27%, 25% by 2025. If you have any questions, I stand for questions.
Further discussion on the A5 amendment, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise in support of this amendment. We did hear in committee, and I think Senator Carlson has done a very good job at correcting this error and moving forward, and there was no opposition in committee, and I would ask for your support for this.
Discussion to the A5 amendment. Seeing none, Senator Carlson renews his motion that the A5 amendment be adopted. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Further discussion on Senate File 1197. Seeing none, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. I'd like to request a roll call vote on Senate File 1197.
Senator Dibble, there will be one because we are on special order.
I'm sorry?
There will be one on because
we're under special orders. All right. I always forget to ask.
You are
one,
confused.
So I try to make that automatic when I want one. Madam President and, and Senator Rosen, as is, often the case with an omnibus bill, policy, or finance, there are a lot of good ideas and sometimes not so great ideas. And to be sure, there are some great ideas in here, and I think, we worked very hard in committee on the multi-year rate making, and that's actually a really good idea, and I'm really happy about that. And some of the department technical issues that we're clearing up, stuff that seems innocuous but causes a lot of money and a lot of staff time and the like, and I thank you for including those items as well. But there are a couple of ideas that aren't so great, and I'm fairly concerned about. One of them, of course, and we talked about this in committee to some extent, and that's bringing the co-ops down to the 1% goal for the Conservation Improvement Program. And, I understand the co-op's concerns and the like, but, we really haven't gotten rolling yet on these conservation improvement programs across the state under the new 1.5% goal. And I'll add that this is a goal, not a mandate. And what the effect of this is, of course, taking out of the hands of the residential customer base in particular, but even the commercial customer base, resources and tools and really making them second-class and substandard citizens with respect to the ability to access those things that they could make use of, whether that's rebates or effort, technical help, efforts to gain control of their energy bills at their place of use, at their homes and at their businesses, retrofitting their homes, retrofitting their businesses, doing all kinds of things, as well as the sorts of improvements perhaps that we could make on the other side of the meter. And so I don't know why we would kind of essentially predetermine before we've even gotten down the path. I know that folks are anxious and they're wringing their hands, but without much effort in the past, folks were getting 0.7-0.8% returns without any effort, a little applied effort, and I think we'll see that the 1.5 or something close to it would be very achievable, and the existing conservation improvement plan that we passed a couple of years ago allows for consideration of good effort, and if economics or customer class or other circumstances show that that's unattainable, there's a way of submitting those plans and getting those thresholds moved down. Likewise, with the pilot program on the inverted block rates for gas customers, it's just in the pilot phase right now. And to simply preordain and prejudge and prohibit even before we conclude the pilot and figure out exactly the level of acceptance and exactly the results, we're simply taking that away. Sure, it's created some concern because it's something new, but the converse, of course, is we have the reverse incentive, and folks can, and we take away that economic signal, that economic incentive for conservation in the gas arena, and we know that conservation is very different than conservation for electricity, and there are so many fewer opportunities just in the kind of the physical plant, our homes, et cetera, because gas is used in such fewer applications. And so it's more difficult. So providing economic incentives, really unleashing the creativity of the market to allow for conservation in the gas arena, I think is a good thing. But Senator Rosen, I'm particularly concerned about the Senator Benson provision that really does put the thumb on the scale of the large industrial customers in this state in the determination by the legislature that cost of service shall be the primary consideration for revenue allocation among consumer classes. And this simply has the effect of reducing the energy bills for our large customer classes, and it's going to drive up our bills for our small businesses and for our residents. The legislature often gives the PUC direction and outlines, broad outlines, but never with this level of specificity, particularly in rate making. There are so many factors that we ask the Public Utilities Commission to take a look at when they're looking at rate cases. So many factors of cost and cost drivers and considerations of infrastructure and depreciation, et cetera, environmental factors, social factors, et cetera, also need to be sifted through. And what this does is it simply takes that authority and that ability out of the Public Utilities Commission's hands. And I know you said they sent you a letter, but I don't think that really bears on our policy decision here today. I don't know why they sent that letter. You know, there are perhaps some extenuating circumstances around the provision of that letter. But I'm telling you here today, this is a mistake. This is a path that we don't want to go down. If for no other reason than we're going to be putting our thumb on the scale on behalf of the large industrial class customers, and we're going to be driving up expenses for residential and small businesses. And I don't know why we would do that. I do know that about a year ago, one particular utility who has a large amount of their energy that they generate is used by their large industrial class customers, and they got a fairly significant rate increase, but they weren't happy with how much they got, and they filed another case immediately after that. And the Public Utility Commission didn't find nearly as favorably in the second round. I mean, it was within minutes they filed their second rate utility case. And so they're cranky. And so they are seeking an advantage in policy here in the legislature to kind of preordain a future outcome of future rate cases that they're going to make. I don't know why we would do this on behalf of them. Time and time again, when these challenges have been brought on these rate cases to the courts, arguing that cost of service wasn't factored in sufficiently, the courts have found absolutely cost of service has been the primary consideration, but the Public Utility Commission has myriad of factors to balance and lots of concerns and lots of technical issues. We know that those rate cases are stacks high, full of documents, a lot of information, a lot of facts to sift through, a lot of facts on the ground, a lot of facts in the law, and they have to bring all of those factors into consideration. So I don't know why we would reach in, cherry pick this one particular facet, and try to advantage one particular class of customers over another. And I think if we do this, we'll regret it, because it's going to show up in the customer bills, it's going to be fairly significant, and we're going to hear from our residents.
Before that, Senator Benson, Secretary will give Senate File 1197 its third reading.
Senate File 1197, a bill for an act relating to energy, third reading.
Further discussion on Senate File 1197. Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam President. And I thank Senator Dibble. He has been very informative in committee and has helped me understand many things, but to his most recent point that somehow this would place an advantage to large businesses, it levels the playing field and it requires that factors used in determining revenue allocation must be supported in record evidence so that we would clearly understand how our rates are developed as they are, and that factors other than cost would be clear to those business owners so that they could understand exactly what other role they're playing in the community. There's nothing that prohibits other factors from being considered. It just states that cost should be the primary factor. Overall, members, this is very good for residents, for small businesses, for mid-sized businesses, and large-sized businesses, from co-ops to our PUC-regulated utilities. And I would ask for your support on this bill.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. Well, I'll read the language. It's very clear and very specific. The first part says that that the PUC can't prejudice or advantage among or between classes of customers, which taken to its logical conclusion means that we would all have to pay exactly the same rate, and I don't think that would really stand up to anyone's test of logic if they thought about the facts. But here's how the crux of the statute that's being proposed reads. Cost of service shall be the primary consideration in the Commission's determination of revenue allocation among consumer classes. And then it goes on to say factors other than cost of service, including impact on business development and job growth, may also be considered and evaluated by the Commission in determining revenue allocations. Factors used in determining revenue allocation must be supported by record evidence. But those next two sentences don't change the first sentence, which is the operative sentence. Cost of service shall be the primary consideration in the Commission's determination of revenue allocation. And that would then supersede what we've been asking the PUC to be doing for many, many, many decades, which is shall give due consideration to the need for adequate, efficient, and reasonable service, for the need for the public utility for revenue sufficient to enable it to meet the cost of furnishing the service, including provisions for the depreciation of the utility property used, their ability to earn a fair and reasonable return upon the investment, evidence about the cost of the property that's devoted to the public use, prudent acquisition cost to the public utility, less the depreciation, construction work in progress, and that's something we address in the multi-year rate case, which is good, offsets in the nature of capital purposes, et cetera. And so this cost of service shall be the primary consideration, and that has the operative effect of greatly advantaging the large industrial customer class base. This is not good for residential customers. This is not good for small businesses. It's going to drive up their bills.
Further discussion, Senator Vanderveer.
Well, members, I hope you heard that, and I hope if anyone from the public is watching, imagine a bill so radical that what it says is the cost of the energy shall be the primary factor in determining how much you charge for it. What a radical concept. I can't believe we're doing that here today. I mean, it is a little shocking because it's the logical thing to do. So that might be a reason why we wouldn't do it. But in reality, I think if we think about this, it is the way that should be maybe the first consideration when we're determining what we're going to charge people for something, the actual cost of the product or service.
Senator Rose and I was waiting and so that you could do final remarks. Do you want to speak before that?
Yes, Madam President. Senator, I would like to actually, I briefly touched on the letter from the PUC dealing with this specific section 4 on the bill, page 2, line 24. And Senator Dibble has made his concerns very clear. We have worked extremely hard to get some appropriate language that everybody could agree upon. The PUC has sent a very good letter about that, and I just briefly addressed it. But they believe that the requirement that the cost of service shall be the primary consideration in determining revenue allocation rate cases does provide a workable framework in which the Commission will be able to make appropriate decisions in the future based on all record evidence. And the remaining, it says, this language allows the commission the flexibility it needs to make these decisions within the totality of the record of evidence and in a manner needed to meet its statutory obligations contained in other current provisions of law. It's important that these sentences, that paragraph, continues in tandem as this proposal advances. So I just want to make it clear that this has been worked on very strongly, and I think this is a good provision, and I believe that we should continue to focus on the cost of service going forward.
Senator Marty.
Madam President, Senator Rosen, on that last comment, I mean, yes, the Public Utilities Commission says if you put this in there, they'll be able to meet this and the other things in the statute because we're changing what the statute says. We're putting this as the top priority. We're making it clear this is the top priority. Senator Vanderveer, you may think this is obvious and common sense, but then let's get back to Senator Benson's comments a few minutes ago. She said, well, this is a win for everybody, for the residential users, the small businesses. No, an allocation matter is who's paying more, who's paying less. If you're going to make it cheaper for the bigger customers, the residential payers, the small businesses are going to be paying more. You can't say that's in their best interest. And this will make this the number one factor rather than, you know, if the largest users pay a little bit more, they're probably the ones who have the best ability to control the demand, the best ones to be able to conserve more, the best ones to reduce the need for more facilities, the best ones to make sure we have a cheaper cost for everyone. If we reduce their costs, it could have the negative impact on everybody. And certainly when we're talking the allocation here, it can't be a win-win for everybody when you're talking about the allocation. Senator Dibble's right. And Senator Vanderveer, I think you're recognizing this as well. It's going to be residential customers, small businesses are going to pay more, so the largest users can pay less. If you want to have that happen, support the bill. But if you don't want it to happen, vote against it.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. President. I also rise to ask you to oppose this bill. I, for one, care about my ratepayers. I care about small businesses and ratepayers, and this bill will raise their costs of energy to the benefit of large businesses. So I encourage a no vote on this. It will raise the costs of the rates that your own citizens and your own constituents will pay on their energy bills.
Any other discussion, members? Seeing none, we will proceed to the roll call. So, I'm sorry, Senator Rosen.
Mr. President, yes, I guess if we are ready for the roll call, I thought there was some other comments, but I do not believe, Senator McGuire, that this is going to raise it. This has been a very many discussions and on this provision. If this is the only reason why you're taking down this provision, there has been much work on this provision, and I think we have a language in there that gives the groundwork to make it even across the board. So there is some outstanding provisions here. It's a good energy bill going forward. I'd like to just make a little comment about Senator Dibble's comments about the SIP program. I think we believe in the SIP program. There are some really great merits to this program, Senator Dibble. However, there are some flaws, and they've been brought up extremely loud from the co-ops and munis. And they are trying very hard to reach their energy goals, but it's virtually impossible to move forward when they have a mandate that makes them equal with all the other utilities. And so they still have to submit a report that is approved or not approved going forward, and all we're doing is removing the floor. Co-ops and munis are close to 90-95% residential, and there's just so much energy savings you can get out of that. I believe that this bill has thoughtfully approached a lot of concerns on our energy issues that we have in the state,
It is not radical. We have not made any big changes going forward. I think we've made the right choice in this committee. As a committee on the whole, we've done this, Senator McGuire. We have worked very hard as a committee of the whole. And I believe that there's a lot of work going forward, and I promise there's not going to be any big blow-ups. It's still going to continue to be a very thoughtful process with all concerned people involved with this. But just to say that this is a bad bill because of one word, the cost of service versus a cost of service, when obviously we have the PUC, who is really in charge of regulating that and determining that, says it's okay, is very difficult for me to stand here and say that's, you know, I'm just a little surprised about that, actually. So everything else in this bill, whether you want a cost of service or the cost of service, everything in this bill has been approved, and there's a lot of consensus. And yeah, people aren't going to get everything they want, but I will tell you, members, that this bill has been extremely vetted through. The business community likes it, the environmentalist likes it, and I ask for your support.
Senator Dibble.
Mr. President, and thank you, Senator Rosen. A couple of things. On the SIP program, I think we're just making a big mistake. We're just basically saying residential customers in greater Minnesota are second-class citizens with respect to those in the Excel service dairy, for example. And I understand the co-ops are concerned, but we really haven't given this a chance yet. And it's not about the utilities. I'm thinking about the lack of access to robust services and the ability for folks to access things that I'm going to have access to in the Twin Cities. And so we're treating people disparately by making this change across our state. And I don't think it's accurate to say that the environmental community is happy with the totality of this bill. So I think that the record just simply needs to be correct. They certainly are happy with some factors and aspects of it. But this is an omnibus bill with some pieces that cause serious concern.
There being no further debate, the secretary will take the roll.
The secretary will close the roll. There being 51 ayes, 14 nays, the motion carries. The bill is passed. Its title agreed to.
Remaining under motions and resolutions, Senator Koch.
Madam President, I move that we take up the calendar.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. On the Senate calendar, we have several on the first page, and there are a few that lie over, but we will be dealing with numbers 1, 2, and 3. Secretary will give Senate File 742 its third reading.
Senate File 742, a bill for an act relating to health, third reading.
Madam President.
Senator Marty, I'm sorry.
Madam President, I'd like to urge members to reject Senate File 742. This legislation, which would allow more than doubling the size of a hospital, a juvenile psych hospital, is of good question why we would be making this change at this time. A few years ago, Prairie Care, which is a good institution that provides behavioral health services, came to the state asking for a 144-bed psych hospital, an exception to the hospital moratorium for that in Woodbury. And they went through the process. They went through the Department of Health, and the Department of Public Health conducted a public review of the need for it, and they made the conclusion that the proposal is not in the public interest. So Prairie Care came back and they reduced it, I think it was to 60-some beds, juvenile facility. Totally different thing, only they didn't go back to the health department say, let's do a review of this. They came straight to the legislature, pushed for it. Because we recognize there's not enough community mental health services in the state, the legislature approved a 20-bed facility, I believe it's in Maple Grove. Now, a couple years later, at the same time we are drastically, in this year's budget proposal, drastically slashing and burning juvenile and youth mental health services in the community, which is terrible for those kids and their families, and is also going to drive up the need for more costly hospitalization care. Now we come back in, and they've come back and asked for this legislation to more than double the size of this brand new facility. Well, if we keep cutting all the juvenile mental health services, we're going to have a need for it. But the people, the proponents of this hospital expansion, acknowledge much of the funds to run the hospital are coming from state medical assistance dollars. We're going to be paying the bills, very costly bills, and at a time when we are cutting the community services, expanding the hospitalization is a backwards move. And I also think that this legislation is very misleading. In the legislation, the page 2 of the bill, page 3 of the bill, excuse me, there's language in there saying that the state does not, here, let me read the commissioner conducted a public interest review of the mental health needs of Minnesota and the Twin Cities metropolitan area in 2008. No further public interest review shall be conducted for the construction or expansion under this clause. That implies that there was a review done in 2008 that suggested there's some need, and now we're just slightly changing it so we don't need to conduct a new review. But the review was for an adult facility, not a juvenile one, and on top of that, it said there wasn't a need for it. So using that as an excuse that we're not going to conduct a new review is just plain misleading. I urge you to reject this bill.
Discussion on Senate File 742. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise in support of this bill, obviously. It's my bill. But I feel very strongly about the misconception, perhaps, that's happening with this bill. This is a private hospital, a private venture that would like to add some extremely needed beds on child and adolescent beds in the state of Minnesota. And if you remember the discussion that we had a couple days ago about this bill, you could go to the website that shows that on every 8 hours, they update this website, and there are zero or one hospital beds for a child and adolescent throughout the state. And it's a matter of what's humane for the patient, for these children, because if they have a severe issue, the parent will take them wherever they need to go to get help. And they'll take them to Thief River Falls. They'll take them to Duluth. But this is for many of these metro kids are getting transported far away from home, far away from their support system, and it's extremely expensive, and it's just not right. So you have a situation where we have a hospital moratorium in this state, and we have to go to the legislature to add any hospital beds. But obviously there's a dire need for these inpatient beds. This is different than community-based programs, members. That's outpatient care. This is acute care for these children that need it immediately or perhaps even yesterday. So I believe that we should move forward with these 30 beds that we're going to add in Maple Grove, because if there wasn't a need, believe me, the hospital would not be asking for this request.
Senator Berglund.
Madam President and members, I also rise to join John Marty's opposition to this bill, because the more and more and more that we cut back on outpatient and community-based mental health services, the more and more and more we will be building inpatient hospital beds for children. And that will drive up our costs. There's just no two ways about it. It's just like if you don't have a primary care doctor to go to, you end up in the hospital all the time for things that should have been taken care of in a doctor's office. A lot of the beds in this hospital are going to be paid for by state government, by taxpayers, and it will show up in our medical assistance program as, you know, increased utilization, and then we have to pay providers more to cover the costs of that increased utilization. We need to slow down on things that are going to drive up the cost of our healthcare programs until we see that we've got our deficit under control. So this time I would ask members to vote against this bill.
Actually, I had Senator Marty and then Senator Hoffman. Senator Marty.
Madam President, Senator Rosen, two comments. You said it's a private hospital, but yes, they're going to be using public medical assistance dollars to put the people in it. It's going to be a huge hit on the cost to medical assistance program, which is okay, and I'd be willing to do that. But first, we ought to provide the basic services. And you just said, oh, we got to have the compassion for these young kids in the hospital. Well, we should have a little more compassion about the thousands of kids who would never need to be in the hospital if we take care of them. But we're slashing and burning is probably a good way to describe what we're doing to juvenile mental health programs in the state. We're doing that, and we're saying, oh, now, but some of these kids are going to end up in the hospital. We better build more hospitals. Where's the compassion? Well, show the compassion in preventing them from going there in the first place.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam President. I'm going to reiterate my support of this bill, and I urge all members to vote for it. Again, I appreciate that we need to control costs of medicine in Minnesota, but the fact is that there are some kids who require hospitalization. No matter how many community-based mental health services we have for them, they need to go into an inpatient setting. I've witnessed it. It's true. The other thing that I said the other day that I want to reiterate is that not all people that are going to use this facility are on the public systems. They have their own private insurance. They want their families close to them. So please, everybody, try and keep that in mind. Again, we can't do heart surgery as an outpatient, just like we can't do psych treatment to kids who need inpatient treatment who are at high risk of committing suicide. And if you look at our teen suicide rates, it's apparent that we've got kids in crisis and they need inpatient surgery. Treatment. So I'm going to urge you to please support this bill. Don't go with the rhetoric that because we are in a budget crisis that kids don't need to be hospitalized. They do.
Further discussion, Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Madam President. And I actually rise in support of this bill. I worked in children's mental health in Hennepin County a few years ago, and it was really, really difficult to find acute care beds when kids were in crisis. So I don't know a lot about the argument. I absolutely agree with Senator Marty and Senator Berglund that we do need to take care of these kids on the front end. We shouldn't take away their other health care benefits and wait until they're acute in acute care. But we never had enough acute care beds, and when kids were in crisis, and we had to find them pretty far away from their homes a lot of times, where their family wasn't able to get to them. And I know we need more of these beds in other areas across the state too. So for a change, I'm standing up and supporting. I'm a bill of the other side, but we do need these beds. Thank you.
Final comments, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, I know this is an emotional issue, and we've had some very good discussions in committee and on the floor about this. And I just want to reiterate that there's a lot of compassion, a lot of angst about our deficit in the state and what we're doing to our community-based programs and addressing these needs. But this is 30 new beds that will, I am certain, be full on a daily basis, which is sad, but it is for the acute care, the inpatient, these children that need help immediately. And I know for a fact that these beds will also have their share of charity care along with them. So we are actually expanding and helping a lot of people that are not able to pay. But to Senator Marty's point, again, about the review, there is nothing in the statute that ties to reviews to expansions. That's just something that has been requested, but there is nothing that says we have to have a review when we do this. So I just want to, again, thank you members for your support. I think we're doing a really good thing here. Obviously, there's a need. That's unfortunate, but we need to move ahead.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 742. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 51 ayes and 13 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Members, I might suggest that we stay closer to our seats. We have two more votes. Secretary will give Senate File 955 its third reading.
Senate File 955, a bill for an act relating to commerce, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 955. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 60 ayes and 5 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Secretary will give House File 664 its third reading.
House File 664, a bill for an act relating to elevators, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll. Secretary will take the roll on House File 664. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 65 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. That completes the calendar. Without objection, we will revert, remaining under motions and resolutions without objection, we'll revert to the fifth order of business, reports of committee. Senator Koch. Oh, excuse me, the secretary will read the report.
Senator Senjum from the Committee on Capital Investment, to which was referred Senate File 187, a bill for an act relating to capital improvements, reports the same back with a recommendation that the bill be amended as follows, and when so amended, the bill do pass, amendments adopted, report adopted.
Senator
Madam
Polk.
President, I move that the report as read by the Secretary be now adopted.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. We move to the sixth order of business, second reading of Senate bills, Senate File 187, second reading.
Madam President.
Senator Koch.
Could I move for a brief recess for the purpose of appointing conference committees?
Senator Koch has moved for a brief recess. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. We are in recess.
Madam President, is there a report at the desk?
Yes, there is. The Secretary will read the report.
Senator Koch from the Subcommittee on Conference Committees recommends that the following senators be, and they hereby are, appointed as a conference committee on Senate File 86, Senators Rosen, Stumpf, and Magnus. House File 186, Senators Daley, Chamberlain, and Reinert. Senate File 1115, 1115 is Ingebretson, Dames, Skoy, Gazelka, and Carlson. Senator Koch moves that the following foregoing appointments be approved.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving on to the 13th order of business, announcements of Senate interest. Without objection, the following members will be excused. Excused Senator Hahn all day, Senator Fischbach from 10 a.m. to 10:15 a.m., Senator Saksok 10:15 a.m. till the end of session, Senator Rosen from 10:45 to 11:30 a.m., Senator Miller from 10:45 to 11:15 a.m., Senator Michelle from 10:45 to 11:15 a.m., Senator Olson from 10:45 to 12 noon, Senator Ortman from 11:45 to 12:30. Without objection, those senators are excused. Senator Ortman.
Madam President and members, the Tax Conference Committee will meet 5 minutes after session in room 15.
Further announcements, Senator Roebling.
Thank you. The Senate Finance Committee will meet at 2 o'clock in 123.
Further announcements, Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam President. I was just wondering if the chairs of the conference committees could give the body a little update on how the discussions are coming, and maybe if they could share with the members of the full Senate what their committee target is. I think people are interested in wondering how things are coming with the House.
Senator Ingebretson.
Madam President, Senator Bach, Conference Committee for Environmental, Natural Resource, Commerce, and energy will be meeting at 6 o'clock. We're hoping to actually wrap that up within a couple of hours tonight.
Further announcements? Senator Perry.
Madam President, Senator Bach, the State Gov Innovation and Veterans completed their first draft of the work at 11:30 last night, and it should be on the web sometime today.
Further announcements, Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President. To Senator Bach's question, the Senate or the Tax Conference Committee will meet this afternoon. We expect to wrap things up post the conference reports yet this afternoon.
Further announcements, and I will just add the Higher Ed Committee is finished and should be the conference committee report should be posted. Senator Gimsey.
Madam Chair and Senator Bach, the Transportation Committee wrapped up their work last night at about 10 o'clock, and that should also be posted here sometime today.
Further announcements? Senator Koch.
That does remind me, Madam President and members, first of all, I'd like to thank all the members that worked on those conference committees. They've been working long, very hard hours, and I appreciate that. But most importantly, I think it's important to thank the staff. Partisan, nonpartisan, have been working much longer than hours than us. Front desk, revisers, sergeants. Hope I'm not leaving anyone out there, but thank you very much for that. With that, members, the Republican caucus will be meeting in room 318 tomorrow morning for caucus at 9 a.m. Room 318 at 9 a.m. And members, I'd like to move that we would adjourn until tomorrow, Saturday, May 14th at 10 a.m.
Senator Koch has moved that we adjourn until Saturday, May 14th at 10 a.m. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. We are adjourned.